Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, back with a second podcast of the week because this is an MWDP. Get in. It's a midweek domestic podcast as we look forward to the final round of the normal Premiership season, round 22, the all-important round 22, and the hunt for those playoff spots. JB is here as usual.
Hello, how are you?
In the rugby dungeon, very well. And Phil is in the rugby dungeon as well.
Hello, Tim.
Socially distanced in our workplace.
Absolutely.
Yes, quite. Well, my workplace now is... Oh, it's in North Wales, isn't it? Because Beardmore & Co, independent financial advisors, I might add, is based in Llandudno. So I'm not even sure if I'm not as good to work now. It's total lockdown over there.
Is it really?
In Conway, it is. My holiday letter, we've had to kick out some bloody guests for next week.
Oh, nightmare.
It's costing me money. It's costing me money now, which really upsets me.
Nightmare.
But, yeah. So, looks like I'll have to take a view on whether I can go to Llandudno on Friday.
I've got a week to Greece, half term.
Of course you
and
have.
That's the one. I keep looking every day at the daily figures for Greece.
Hang on a minute.
They're still so low. They're crazy low, but I can just imagine they're gonna spoil it for me.
Do you need to go into quarantine if you spent all week on the Maltese Falcon just off the Greek islands?
I'm just hoping because Boris's dad quite likes Greece. He'll take care of it.
But isn't he Greek or Russian or something?
No, he's Turkish. So actually,
that
would be a reason why they would just shut Greece down.
Yeah, absolutely, it would be. As well as everything else, because he's an awful authoritarian.
And rugby,
yes.
Yeah, no rugby.
Yeah,
no crowds.
They could all be led out in handcuffs until we play rugby again, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, so we've got round 22 to look forward to. We've seen the midweek games. It pretty much went down as we suggested it would. Not exactly whether it was 5 points or 4 points as Phil predicted, but in the main.
I was 1 point out of my four predictions.
Out
my four
of 20
important,
points.
I predicted 19 and the teams actually secured 20.
So, yes. So what was he?
As in when Phil wargamed how the season would play out, he said how he thought round 21 would go. Mm. And of the four teams that are chasing those three remaining top four spots, Phil predicted there would be 19 points gathered by them between them, and they gathered a full 20.
And it was Wasps that let me down, because I only predicted they'd get a 4 point away win at Quinns, albeit they left it late.
They did.
And it was only thanks to the Ilya red card that they actually came back into it. And it was only with 4 or 5 minutes to go that they actually secured that bonus point.
Has anyone sent a memo to the Wasps players saying you're not that talented, stop playing so well? Because if they have sent it, none of them have actually read it.
Well, it seems like they read it and then got another memo on about 60 minutes going, oh no, only joking.
Yeah, don't play well again. Oh, okay, yeah, sure. I thought they were brilliant, actually, in parts.
Yeah.
Quinns
were good.
Were great.
Dom Brandt was great.
In that period between Dom Brandt coming on and Ilya getting sent off, Quinns were brilliant, and Dom Brandt and Marcus Smith in particular were exceptional.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the young fly half issue, Jacob Umanga had a bit of a stinker, as he did against Sale. That's not to, you know, detract from the great performances he's put in. Marcus Smith has been consistently very good.
Mm.
And if he did want to pick another 10, then I think you probably say that Marcus Smith is ahead of Umanga, and it's just a question of where's Joe Simmons fits in that picture.
Yeah, Joe Simmons is a great question.
Oh, who knows?
Because that try that Marcus Smith scored this week, I mean, I can't see Joe Simmons scoring one like that. But then his try was so good against
Toulouse
on that stage.
And his overall control play is just such a high
quality.
But like
you look at Smith and you look at Umanga, and who do you see really? You see a younger version of Ford.
Yeah.
Don't you? You look at Simmons and you see a younger version of Farrell.
It's definitely they're on that trajectory.
Yeah. So maybe it's not a case of does Joe Simmons fit in? Joe Simmons is the cornerstone. And one of the other two boys has to play around him.
Mm. Yeah. But I think those three, because they're all much younger, they'll have many years to fight that battle after the next World Cup.
They will be fighting it.
They will be.
I do agree. Marcus Smith seems to be a cut above everyone else.
He has such classy
moments, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does some amazing things. Like that try this week, and when he stepped round renowned speedster Dan Norton. Yeah. The other week, just skipped round him as if he wasn't there about 3 weeks ago.
Should we talk about this game as we're on it?
Well, just on the Marcus Smith thing, there's one thing Austin Healey said in commentary a week or so ago. The hair, saying, cut your hair. You can't be touching your... There was one little injury, a breaking play, and they were talking about Marcus Smith, and Austin sort of said... You just got to cut your hair. You watch him. He touches his hair all the time. And as Austin said it, Marcus Smith gave a big sweep of the hair. And then another one as they were on him. And then another one. He does touch it a lot.
It's a weird... When he said that, I thought, ha, 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 that's funny. And then I heard other people say, what a stupid thing to say. And I thought, like, you know, he's probably right. How many times have you been on a rugby field and you've looked at a guy who's done his hair beforehand and you can see, like, this white sort of thing dribbling down the side of their face? You say, what the hell's that? Oh, yeah, it's like hair wax. I mean, it is a thing. But isn't hair wax meant to be grippy?
No, hair wax isn't grippy.
It is when it dries. That's why your hair is...
No, you got the sticky spray for that, if you want that.
Yeah.
I never got on with the sticky spray.
No, I know. I mean,
I never...
The sticky spray is stupid, isn't it? Because what if you want to pass it?
Yeah, I was going to say, when you want to do the little offloads, it doesn't work.
It depends if you want to dummy the offload, in which case it works perfectly, right?
And I don't like training with something that's different to what you're going to play in.
Yeah.
So unless you're going to sticky spray every time you do a bit of passing practice or catching practice, you're making everything different.
The worst one was grip mitts.
The sip mitts is what we should have done.
The graded introduction and then removal of the tips, the fingers.
They were rated for six games, or maybe less than that. So you know, if you're a student and you want to look like Andy Goode, say, like I did back in the day... you buy your gloves and you train them because you want to look like the coolest in university training, right? And then you realise that after, what,
two training sessions, two games,
all the grip has gone and you need to buy a brand new pair of stick mitts for, I don't know, how much were they, like 25 quid?
I have no idea.
I don't know that much, but they weren't.
It's a lot of money when you're
10,
student.
12 quid.
No, they were more than that, I'm sure they were. So I remember getting a pair for Christmas and being absolutely delighted with them.
I can honestly say I've never worn them and never wanted to wear them.
Oh, I wanted to wear them. I really wanted to wear them.
I remember thinking cycling shorts look really cool, so I got a nice pair of long cycling shorts to go under my shorts.
Now you're talking about, always loves long cycling shorts.
It's kind of like coffee, right? So with coffee, I think the best way to have your coffee is black. The reason being is if you have it like with a tiny bit of foam or a bit of caramel syrup or whatnot, you're always at the mercy of not having caramel syrup available should you go somewhere and they can't serve you your coffee. You know, these narcissists that have a very specialist coffee and they can't possibly envision coffee without all these bits. Well, the same for rugby and rugby kit. So I always then decided from now on I'm going to train and play with shorts, no cycling shorts, socks and top. That was it. Doesn't matter the weather or where I am. So I'm not reliant on cycling shorts. And I forget everything all the time. The only thing I can be guaranteed to bring is socks, boots, shorts and top. And not even that.
See, despite my job being like media and all that, I don't have much of an ego. And I'm not a massive narcissist, but I do remember when I really put some work in around my university years on my squats and cleans and all of that. And I had I had good quads.
Mm.
And that was all it was about. It was what length cycling shorts is going to make my quads look best. And the ones that came just below the shorts were, so, were the
yeah,
best.
Maybe. Just put a little trim.
Just a little trim. Cuff on. Yeah,
do
little,
you know what think it'd be better?
A cuff.
Have you ever seen...
a quad cuff.
You ever seen Belgian blue cows?
Yes. Right. I love Belgian blues. Let me find a picture.
Do you know what a Belgian
no,
blue is?
No, I don't know what
this
is.
What, you know what a Belgian blue cow is? What kind of man are you?
What, as in a cow?
A cow, yeah. Belgian yeah. blue cow.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, with Belgian blue cows, what they do is they get a little razor and they shave the fur.
Oh, right yes, word. I do know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, go
so,
on.
Right. So, they shave around the musculature of the cow or the bull or whatever it is. So, you can appreciate the size and the
musculature.
The
musculature, yeah.
It makes me think we should make cycling shorts, maybe holes in which would fit around the quad area. So, if you. Or in some way, maybe.
Well, you could have some shading. Yes, to accentuate the definition.
Like, yeah, so like tights are basically see-through, right?
Yeah.
But there's nothing to say you couldn't have different shades on tight material.
Well, yeah, and on this, and going back to the Quins game, trying to sort of dovetail us back in there.
Oh, yes, of course.
No, it's fine. Wilco Lowe, the new South African tight-head prop of Quins, who got hammered in the scrum, by the way, by Ben Harris. He got monstered by Ben Harris, but... His quads are immense, and I was so disappointed that on his right leg, the last two games, he's got this great big bandage that he wears, which just totally covers up. When they have the close-up shot of the scrum...
Is it for jumping?
No, obviously for an injury.
He's about 21 stone, isn't he?
He's not a good prop, though, by the looks
and,
of it.
Well, but it totally, on the close-up shots... from when Quins were going in one direction, it just totally ruined any shot of his quads, which was it's a travesty. Yeah. But not as much of a travesty as how many penalties he conceded.
Oh my word! I mean, Wasps—they do certain things well, right? And we've discussed this: the way they play the game, the way they offload the ball, their running game, all things you associate with Wasps, they do well. But for them to be scoring pushover tries and dominating the lineout, Gaskell was absolutely hammering the lineout. And in the scrum as well, they scored a pushover try. That's amazing. That's actually amazing. So they've got an entire game now. What was even more amazing than them being able to scrimmage and execute set pieces really well was the fact that Quins didn't fold. I thought Quins were basically there for the taking. By about half time, that game should have been done and dusted.
Mm. I really think you notice Wasps without Joe Launchbury.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
because they look twitchy, and they just I was watching that game thinking if Joe Launchbury's on the field, they do probably do that. Mm. They do probably just a calm voice.
Yeah.
When things get a little bit,
I think all of his appearances, his appearances probably match that of half the squad.
Launchbury's appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably not far wrong.
Well, he's probably got 100-plus appearances for Wasps, if not more.
Probably close to 200 appearances.
So if you add up all the appearances for everybody else...
Maybe Dan Robson aside.
Well, Dan Robson's...
He must have 100.
Yeah, but...
A lot of them for Gloucester.
Yeah. I mean, Dan Robson's up there, but Umunga's not.
Bassett must have a few by now. But yeah, I'll take your point. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's important, because these guys are just playing... They're playing freely and openly. Well, hang on a minute. I'm going to backtrack now. They can play freely and openly. What they did against Harlequins, which I really liked, was they narrowed the game, particularly in the second half when Aaliyah went off. And I remember Compton saying, the space isn't going to be there. It's going to be out wide because Ashton's off the field. But it doesn't work in that manner. The way you manipulate the space out wide is not just to throw the ball wide and let people drift onto you. It's to hammer up the middle until they commit the men, and then there is space.
They did maybe do it a little bit too much for a period where they kept getting pinged at the breakdown by Robshaw and Will Evans, who were both great again.
But you have to do it until it works. There isn't an easy option. You either do that or you kick it away, but you can't just move it wide for the sake of moving it wide, because that's what you turned over.
You've got to earn the right to go wide.
Yeah.
And it never more so than when someone's in the bin or... off the pitch.
Mm.
You really got to earn it.
Yeah. I mean, I think what sums them up is Ogre, who I obviously love, Barbary, who I think everyone else is going to start loving soon.
Barbieri, yeah.
Just the fact that they can play everywhere, and they do play everywhere, and they're meant to be tight forwards, but they don't play like that. You know, there's a lot to like about Wasps. There's not that much really to like about Harlequins, I must say, except for their two players.
Dombrant and Smith.
And Smith. That's it, really.
Dombrant. Dombrant, his ability to read the defensive line and the timing of the pass of the guy ahead of him.
Yeah.
The guy who's giving him the ball. No matter who that guy is, whether that guy is a prop forward, a lock, or Marcus Smith or one of the other backs, he seems to be able to just have that knack of timing both the pass and the defensive line. And the angles that he runs, they're just amazing.
And this is why I think he can step up and do really well on the international stage, because he has one of the best rugby brains of any player in the Premiership.
I do agree with the rugby brain.
So I've got reservations. I tend to think that he picks his moment, which is obviously a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what if there are no moments for him to pick? What does he do then?
You've got to find the moments. And that's what he seems to be incredible at.
But he's playing...
But if there are no moments, then no one will be able to find a moment. But if there is the potential for a moment, he's a guy that will find it.
Well,
whereas there are lots of other players who might be faster, fitter...
Better rigs,
all the rest of it. But what differentiates... Anyone can do that stuff. What differentiates the great players is that they think that fraction of a second quicker, they do something slightly different, they read what's going on in a very... in a way that other people don't. And I think he's got that about him.
He definitely has the things you can't coach thing going on.
Mm.
But I just wonder... Is he going to work harder in the pick-and-go game? Is he going to work harder on the latching game? Is he going to clear his rucks? Because it does take an awful lot of effort to get out of your rucks and get out of your latching to sort of find that space and then run onto it. I wonder if he can do everything else to a high enough level to warrant him being able to have that free role, particularly at international level where everyone's got to pitch in.
So what I would say to that point is that everything that you've just listed there are the basics, the easy stuff.
Really easy.
He's definitely got the rugby brain. It's whether he's got the hard work to do the rugby to add those high effort but low skill based things to his very high skill base and very high intelligence game.
Can he be Don Armand? That is my question.
Well, what England would need him to be if he got a chance is Billy Vunipola. And what's maybe in his favour, looking to England, although I don't think Eddie Jones will go in this direction, is that Eddie seems to have very clearly defined roles for each of his back row positions. And actually, if Don Brandt played a similar game to Billy Vunipola, it would bring out the best in him, I think. Because Billy Vunipola is the major contribution, although he does lots of things, Billy Vunipola, he does a lot, but his main contribution is punching holes as a ball carrier.
Yeah, and I think he punches them differently. I think he just runs into masses of men, wins huge collisions. You don't really see that many very smart lines from Billy, like a centre. You see him bludgeoning his way. I'm sure he can do it. I'm sure he does do it. But he bludgeons his way through. Don't really see that from Don Brandt. Again, doesn't mean he can't do it.
Mm.
Maybe he's just doing something else.
Yeah.
And that's my question. What else can he do? Let him play in Exeter for you. Let's see if he can do that.
Well, yeah, and I'll put it this way. Imagine Billy Vunipola with the ability to spot a weak shoulder in the way that Alex Donbrandt can.
When was the last time you saw Billy Vunipola run in a 30-yard try?
Not that often. Do you know who I think?
Very infrequently, but Donbrandt seems to do it multiple times a season.
Do you know who I think is a better picker of angles than Billy Vunipola?
Mako.
Yeah, Mako is awesome at it.
Mako is good.
Mako is so good at that. Maybe that's what Billy Vunipola looks like if he was good at picking angles. Mako.
Do you know what? I think we can talk about games and stuff, but I think let's just focus on this top four race.
Yes.
And look at this final weekend. Because the game's on BT Sport, by the way. Hot off the press, this.
They're all on BT Sport.
Because they're all 3 o'clock.
They're all 3 o'clock. So there will be a studio programme.
So if I was going to say which games are on, I'll just guess.
Yeah, go on.
The biggest game I can think of that weekend is going to be Wasps. And I imagine that's where they're putting all of their top talent.
I mean, I totally agree with you. Let's have a look where I'm going. Oh, yeah, I'm going to Wasps. No, so there's going to be a studio build-up. Which will build this two live games being shown. I don't think every game is being shown this time because when you look at it, there are I think there's two main games.
Yeah, yes. There's two main games in my mind.
And on BT Sport 1, I believe, I might have the channels wrong, but the main game will be Saracens against Bath.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, because...
The send-off for Saracens.
Yeah, will they go big and have a big last dance send-off at home? I suspect after the game in Racing, I did speak to Mark McCall, and he said, we're going to wait and see what we do. We're going to decide what we do over the coming days. And by that, I don't know what he meant, but I'm guessing what he meant was, basically, I'm going to ask Richard Wigglesworth and Brad Barrett, do you want to have a big game? Should we go for it? Or should we just get on the... Or would you rather just have a bit of a week with the lads just on it somewhere?
Of course, they can't even do that now, can they?
Well, no, they can't. So I suspect, knowing those guys, you know, knowing the sort of character Richard Wigglesworth and that are, I reckon they'll go, no, let's do this.
They'll do it. And I'll tell you why I think they'll do it. Well, partly because they can't go out boozing. And I mean that seriously. So... I guess...
Had they been able to go to, like, Oktoberfest?
Yeah, Oktoberfest or you know, the church, if it's still open in bloody... Or any of these other things, right? That would somewhat soften the blow. So they could say, right, yeah, we'll put out next year's youth team or, yeah, we'll be building next year. Well, there is no next year now. And they can't go out for a beer afterwards. So this is literally it. This is the best thing that they can do with their mates, which is get on the field.
And it's at home.
And start writing people off.
And, yeah, and ruin Bath's party.
Exactly, and Bath are, I don't know, Bath pro Saracens, or were they? I think they kind of are. They're not the biggest enemy, are they?
Yeah,
because there were
suggestions that Bath were one of the clubs implicated in the 2015 issues.
Yeah.
And that happened to be when Bath lost in the final to Saracens as well.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to hate Bath as much as some other clubs. But there's going to be a healthy amount of dislike. So, you know, even thinking about this game makes me feel slightly ill, actually. Just so sad.
So Bath would have been... Well, to put it like, are Bath pro or anti-Saracens? They would have been cheering for Saracens on Saturday at Racing. Because they think, please win, please beat Racing.
Yeah.
Because then they'll just chuck the second team out against them.
So, yeah, that is going to be the moment. So the way I'm going to watch this game, because I will probably watch this one. I don't know. Yeah, I probably will. But there's a much better experience to be had than watching BT Sport on TV. Have you tried watching it? I mean, you watch it on the app, yeah?
Yeah, I generally watch on the app.
Have you tried the enhanced player?
Yeah,
it's great.
It's bloody brilliant. It's
great.
It's better than watching on. I can't. You know, watching on your TV is fine, but the enhanced player is great because every time someone scores a try, you just click on it.
Yeah,
and it's away. So if you, for instance, do a rugby podcast, you can't get a better service.
Yeah, it's great. It's great with multiple games.
Yeah,
it's great scrolling through and going through all the incidents.
Yeah. I imagine that's how they wanted to design NFL Red Zone, but they just didn't really, you know, the technology wasn't available.
You've not got the brains that BT Sport have
exactly
available.
Right. Exactly right.
So you'll get the guys in comms, Nick Mullins will be on that one with a couple of the guys, and they will have on the main channel. Don't know which channel it is. I think it's one. I think it's BT Sport One. They will have they will play in tries from all around the grounds.
Mm. Yeah.
Including at the Rico, which is where the other live game is, and that's where I'll be. Wasps against Exeter. Wasps in second against top of the table Exeter.
So no one has any leeway, really, do they?
Well, so...
Yeah, go on, run us down, Phil.
So as it currently stands, Wasps... So Wasps are in primary position. They're on 66 points, but they also have arguably the most difficult fixture. Because they're playing top of the table.
Yeah.
Albeit Exeter have other things on their mind.
Just to add to that as well, Exeter's team tonight did not look like a second team, let alone a first team.
Yeah, it's a third team.
It's like a 2.5 team.
Yeah.
Because you had the guys that were on the bench at the weekend.
Yeah, you did, in fairness. You had a few.
In a few of the positions, it was third choice. Like fly half was Harvey Skinner.
Yeah.
And Steenson wasn't put out there.
So it looks like they are gearing up for a dress rehearsal of the cup final.
No.
They're
not going to put their big names out. No way, because they've got 3 weekends in a row, potentially, if they win the semi-final.
Hang on. They play this weekend. Run me through it again. So this weekend. Next weekend?
This weekend is the final of the Premiership, which is irrelevant. This is irrelevant for Exeter. Exeter have already finished in first. The following weekend is the semi-final of the Premiership.
Yeah,
the weekend after that is the final of Europe, and the weekend after
that.
No,
you're right. So they're not going to put out the ultimate first team.
There'll be a few of the bench players, and a few people who probably need match fitness, like Ollie Woodburn, who I think would be first-choice winger alongside Jack Noel when he's fit. He might get some extra game time.
Is James Short still at Exeter?
Not sure, I believe
don't
so.
No.
Believe so.
Not sure.
Anyway.
I've not seen
one of those players who doesn't play for years, and someone goes, oh, do you remember James Short? Who? Yeah, he scored a hat-trick this weekend.
But for Phil Dolman, it could be his last game, if he plays. That was possibly his last game at Sandy Park tonight.
Yeah.
And he was Rob Baxter's first signing.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. That is amazing.
Really lovely guy.
Yeah.
He should have had a Welsh cap, poor fella.
I know. Was it the injury? Was it 2015?
Yeah, it was around that. It was the World Cup warm-up games. He got an injury.
Ugh.
Poor guy.
I can't remember who they're playing, but it
poor
was...
Dollars.
Who was it now? I remember him being 31. Is that one of the oldest Welsh warm-ups? Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, 31, something like that. So anyway, back to the table. So Wasps are in primary position.
With a point cushion.
With 1 point cushion, but arguably the hardest fixture. You might say the hardest fixture is Bath. So Wasps are on 66, Bath are on 65, Bath travelling to Allianz Park. And Bath have an advantage as well, because Bath have won 14 games. So if you're tied at any point in the table, it first goes off on wins four, and it then goes on points difference, and then it's points for and against.
So for that reason, if Bath win in any fashion, even 3-0, they go through to the semi-finals.
They definitely go through, because Salem Bristol, with a 5-point win, if Bath only get a 4-point win, they can go level on points, but they can't overtake them on wins. So Bath know a win is good enough. Sale then are in fourth on 64 points, same as Bristol, but Sale have a big advantage over Bristol, which is points difference. They've got the best points difference of any of those four teams.
They've also got,
and they should add to that a little bit as well in their last game.
They might do. And then in the worst position is
Bristol. They play Worcester.
Sale host Worcester. Bristol travel to London Irish. Now, Bristol, it is officially out of their hands. If everyone else gets 5-point wins, unless Bristol can overcome a 116-point deficit, considering that Sale get a 5-point win, Bristol have to get a 5-point win with 116 more points than Sale get in their 5-point win. So it is out of Bristol's
hands.
It'll
be the biggest betting scandal in rugby in history if that happens.
Yeah. Sale win by 50 points, Bristol win by 166 points.
That'd be incredible. So Bristol have the easiest game, it would seem, but from the most disadvantaged
position. I think Sale at home to Worcester, and Worcester having put out their best team tonight.
Yeah, I mean, one
I
of
think
those
Sale, have, yeah. Sale comfortably yeah. have the best fixture.
You'll be banking on those two.
Sale are in the semi-finals in some form. I'm calling it. They're getting five points and they're in the semi-finals. Bristol are going to win, but they're waiting on the two results of the teams above them.
Bath and Wasps. Agreed.
Both of which could
Wasps lose. I don't know why. I just think they do. It's an extra second team. I think Bath have the hardest game, but are arguably better equipped to deal with that game, because they are monstrous and they just haven't really... I still don't think that they've got it together quite. I know that win against Gloucester was mighty impressive.
The last 20 minutes of it.
Yeah, but they still need more. They still need a lot more, and Saracens would be a great test for them.
Great test for them. They've got to beat the best to get there. As much as the whole last dance and playing for Barrett and Wigglesworth and stuff, the emotion and the... To have lifted it to get to beat Leinster, and then to raise it again to almost beat Paris, win away in Paris.
Yeah.
To then do it for a third week when there is nothing riding on it other than pride. As amazing as that team spirit is, I just can't see that a third week in a row.
Yeah. And
Bath aren't good. I mean, they're really good.
Yeah.
And a 4-point front. Yeah, a 4-point win. A win in any fashion wins it for Bath. And they do know that.
Bath are in, Sale are in, Exeter in. That last place is between Wasps and it's between Bristol.
Yes.
Bristol definitely beats.
Bristol getting a 5-point win.
Bristol getting 5-point win at Irish, which would put them on 69 points. 2 points ahead of Wasps.
Oh, so it does look like Wasps probably will miss out.
I'm saying Wasps win at home. If Exeter put out a second team, second/third team, Wasps win at home.
One of Bath or Wasps will win. I don't know which one. I doubt both of them will.
I think the most likely who's in the top four to drop out are Bath. So the three options here, as I see it, and I think it might be a pick one of these. The first one is Bath lose and drop out of the top four.
Okay.
Second one is everyone wins, Bristol miss out.
Yeah.
Third option is, this is as I see it, rather than Wasps or Bath losing, I'm going to go Wasps and Bath lose.
Yes.
And then it flips the top four where Wasps still make the top four but in fourth place and have to go to Exeter, and Sale jump up to second in the table and Bristol get Bristol. Third and play Bristol at home.
Ooh.
Yeah, because if Wasps and Bath drop points, that is the best news for Sale. Because Sale can...
Yes. Still get a home semi-final.
Yeah, because Sale and Bristol will get 5 points.
I don't think
wins.
Sale care about third. I don't think they care about second.
They care about not being fourth.
Fourth. Yeah. Everyone cares about not being fourth.
As long as they're not fourth, I think many neutrals will be very, very happy about that.
It's so true. It's so true. Getting a home semi-final could be massive, but you'd much rather go away to Wasps than away to Exeter by a mile.
And they've already been away to Wasps, and it was comfortable for them. Very comfortable, actually.
With their second team.
Yeah. Yeah.
With Sale's second team against Wasps' first team. So
I don't think they probably don't want to see Bath against... Mind you, they couldn't deal with Bath.
And from Wasps' point of view, can you imagine them dropping points to Exeter's second/third team and earning a shot away at their first team? Good luck, boys.
Ooh.
Yeah. Bristol are in. Bristol better... I've said this many times, but Bristol better win this thing. Sorry, they better win the European Cup.
They better win one thing.
Yeah. If they don't win the European Cup, this whole season's been a complete waste.
So, right.
Well, at least Sale have won the Premiership Cup, so this season's going to be a success, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one more
totally,
cup than they had last year.
Yep.
So, JB, what are you saying? So, the four options are everyone wins, Bristol miss out. Bath lose, only Bath lose, and they miss out. Only Wasps lose, and they miss out. Or Wasps and Bath lose, Bath miss out, and it flips the top four. What do you think?
Gives me no pleasure to say this. I think... I don't know. It's one of two. Wasps out or Bath out with them both losing. I think Wasps lose. I think Bath might lose.
I think Bristol. I think all teams will win. Actually,
that's an incredible shot.
I think that's the way I'm going as well.
Get your accumulator on. If you believe that, get your accumulator on.
I think all four of them are going to win. And I think therefore, and Sale and Bristol, the two that matter, they will definitely get 5-point wins. So Bristol miss out. They might eat into that 116 point disadvantage that they have, but I don't think they'll do enough.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
One other thing on this is, so Bath have had, like, come next week, they'll have had like 9 or 10 days off.
That's a great point.
Because they played last Tuesday.
Yeah, they did. Why were they allowed to do that? Is that not a disadvantage?
It was something to do with, was it not to do with the Premiership Cup final?
Well, Premiership Cup final was obviously played by two teams who were in it. But then the Premiership to have a one-off game, so they had a handful. They had two teams.
Had
more rest. I don't really understand why that's
because neither of those played in Europe either, did they?
No, but like Sale and whoever it is,
Harlequins and no, it was Gloucester and Bath played.
Yeah.
Oh,
Gloucester and Bath last Tuesday.
Yeah, actually,
so neither of those were involved in the Premiership Cup or Europe.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, it could be it, actually.
That could be the reason why they were given the choice of when to play it.
That might actually, when you look at it, that might be the only fixture where they were able to play from
round 20. And you got a televised evening out of it. But it does mean, like you say, going into this, but I mean, you can say Gloucester have also had a big rest for their final home game. It's not going to affect the table much other than they can leapfrog Northampton with a win.
Yeah. Gloucester, Northampton. No one really cares.
Nobody cares.
I care because I've got a bunch of Gloucester players in my fantasy rugby draft team and it is the final this weekend.
Over the weekend, I was alerted to some news. It gives me, again, no pleasure in saying this. But I've heard a rumour that you and your brother are either in cahoots or you have your brother's password. For his fantasy rugby team.
I beat you in the semi-final. There's no class.
I don't need to hear anymore. All I said is Tim wouldn't do that. And I'm just asking you. You wouldn't do that, would you, Tim? That isn't something.
I wouldn't. No, of course not.
I don't need to hear anymore. I will get rid of all that incriminating evidence which Ollie has sent me. I'll just delete it because your word is worth more than that.
See, I love this. This is scandalous. We've got the person I beat in the semi-finals having a chat with the person who I'm playing in the final, discussing reasons why there's some level of illegitimacy to my victory. Look, I've been the one saying whoever wins this league this year, there's an asterisk next to it because it's just a ridiculous year.
Two asterisks is next to it, but I'll go back to Ollie and I'll tell him, even though it's my duty as a league commissioner to look at these things, the integrity of the players and trusting the players is more important. So if you say that, Tim,
mate,
there's no more to answer.
I'd also say how many messages on a rugby draft WhatsApp group have been some variation of there are no rules from you as the commissioner.
There's certainly no rules. I think about it, they were very defensive texts that I got back. It doesn't matter. Like I say, it's not an issue. Is it?
So good luck in the final, Tim.
Best of luck. To you and your brother in the final. I mean, just to you in the final.
So, yeah, and a well-rested Ollie Thorley scoring having another 50-point haul would be quite handy.
Oh, did anyone watch the Sale game?
I did.
Sale Northampton game?
Yeah.
So I guess the big takeaway from this is two big injuries. Yes. One which will affect England and one which will affect...
Two
which will affect England and one which will affect the Premiership finals, you would assume, should things go to plan.
Yeah, so Laws and Tuolagi.
Poor Courtney.
Off.
I mean, that one for Laws is... Well, he's out of the England games. I think that's pretty certain. I think that's about 3 months' worth. It's also about £100,000 worth of appearance fees.
I mean, it's mad when you actually think about that.
Oh, no, 25% pay cut. So it's about £80,000 worth of appearance fees.
I was thinking, like, if I was him, and I said, yeah, you've got to play Sale. I mean, I get the pride thing. It's such a rubbish business model. If they get injured and they can't play, they lose basically life-changing money. If you invest that money well, or if you put it in a pension, or you know whatever you do with it, you can't actually put it in a pension because they probably earn too much. But that's not the point. If you invest it well,
even after taxes and stuff, that's £50,000.
Yeah, I wonder if England have got to relook at their structure for paying their players, because you get this massive, whacking, great big chunk per game. If you're injured, it might actually change your life. There's also a lesson here for the players. Like, they can't. It must be very difficult if someone gives you £20,000 to play a rugby game, but you know you can't spend it, or you can't get used to living on that money because the next.
It could. Yeah, you might get one cap.
As you go.
Also, I wonder if it could get to the point sometime down the line. It hasn't got there yet. But do you remember? I don't know if it still happens, but when you'd get footballers just pretending they had an injury when there was an international friendly match.
Oh yeah. It massively still happens.
Does it?
I don't really follow
football.
I'm not sure I would. I mean, they comparatively, their pay for England probably doesn't match up to whatever they get for United or Chelsea.
I think they get a nominal fee and it's a donation.
And it's directly donated
to charity. So I think there is no money.
That is ridiculous.
But if you're good enough to play for England, you will be on a multi-million pound per year contract anyway.
You're true.
So your paymasters are the club, and therefore when it's a friendly, I've just tweaked my ankle, can't make it.
Yeah.
But it's the inverse with rugby, where you could imagine it could get to a point, particularly if money is cut quite a lot. It could get to a point where a player goes, like, I'm not saying Courtney Laws is a guy that would never do this. he's too honest and too hard-working. But you could get to a point where on a game when really there's nothing on the line for Northampton beyond pride, going, oh, do you know what? Just tweak my knee a little bit because you've got 100 grand's worth of England matches.
There is no way on earth I would play that game. That's not even a joke. I'm not even saying that in jest. If someone said, you are going to be in the England team and your record suggested you're 100% going to be in it, I wouldn't strap up my boots. No chance.
If you just look at it purely from a business decision, purely financially, you love playing rugby.
I mean, if you were in a chance
and it's your
team
and your captain and your team and all the rest of it.
Yeah, that's fine when you're playing for Toc H, right? But it's not fine if you're playing for, you know, a Premiership club, unless you're in a chance of winning something. But when you're guaranteed, I mean, like, if I was George Ford or Owen Farrell, and again, it's not, and then England are lucky it's not in their nature. England are very lucky that they've not got any super talented players who it is in their nature to say, no, I need that money more than I need to play for Leicester Tigers or whoever it is.
Just on a totally separate subject, where's Ben Teo playing now?
Yes, where is Ben Teo playing now?
Just a totally separate subject, anyway.
Do you have a story about Ben Teo, allegedly?
I was going to say, is he back in the NRL?
Yes.
Yes.
He went to Japan, he spent some time at Sunwolves and then back.
Very good.
Yeah.
So the story on Ben Teo, right, and this is complete conjecture and speculation, so, you know, he was signed under the promise that they wouldn't build a plastic pitch. And then he gets there.
Yeah, you mentioned
pitch.
This before, yeah.
Well, I won't be playing then. And he and his word.
He didn't.
If that is true, that explains quite a lot.
That is a business decision.
But if player wages, as I say, there's a huge depreciation in what they're worth for their club, I wonder if that could become a factor going into, well, particularly Alex Lowe in the Times wrote a piece where he's done a bit of digging and suggested that international players, English players playing in the Premiership, England players playing in the Premiership during the next season will miss 11 of the first 14 rounds of the Premiership.
Madness.
Absolutely. And that's because of the mandatory stand-down period after the autumn international tournament.
Yeah.
And then the Six Nations as well.
You know, it's a lot for the owners to stomach that, isn't it? They're losing money hand over fist. Yeah, I've been on record as saying I don't think they handled the player cuts particularly well, but there we go. Now they're expected to lose the people that they pay a lot of money to.
Probably the players that they pay most to.
Yeah. Because the RFU have decided
fixture scheduling.
Yeah, so, yeah, on the strength of that, he couldn't have known this is how it was going to pan out. But Steve Diamond signing a load of South Africans looks like a masterstroke now because they are in the box seat for next season, big time.
Well, unless South Africa call them up, of course, in which case they've got an even bigger problem than England. At least you can travel back up from Pennyhill Park to do some stuff if you're not picked.
That said, have you seen the Green v Gold match that they're doing in South Africa and the lineups? Even without all the players in Europe, it's pretty handy, those teams.
Yeah,
I bet. Rob Dupree has been mentioned as a name for the Springboks, which blows my mind, because obviously we need them at Sale.
And Andre Pollard's out long term.
Yeah. Was it knee injury?
Yeah, I think ACL maybe. Ooh. Or was it Achilles? I can't remember. It's a serious injury anyway.
Yeah, I remember thinking that's not good.
No,
that's a long... long
well,
injury.
If Manu's injury is what we think it is, and I say what we think it is, what we saw on TV.
He's holding his Achilles, isn't he?
Achilles, that's 9 months. It depends. A snapped Achilles is one of the worst things he can do, really.
It's meant the surgery for a snapped Achilles is meant to be absolutely brutal because it curls up basically
it's
behind
horrible,
your knee.
It?
Oh my God! So joking. It's like an elastic band.
Yeah. So it pings. Wow. If it's fully such a strong fully
thing.
Ruptured, and so. They have to go in, big slice, dig all the way under your calf muscle.
Oh,
and it's maybe a very tough job to actually pull it down, to extend it,
well,
to
oh
then
God.
Stitch it.
If you ever
brutal
seen, surgeons at work, orthopaedic surgeons, you may as well be watching carpenters, or masonry students, because they are just drilling, they're tapping away at things. They've got
hammering.
How do they connect the tissue together? Do they fuse it together?
I assume it's... because then you're killing the tissue as well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I assume it's stitched.
Stitched, I guess.
But,
I mean, it just sounds
oh, wow.
That, absolutely.
It's not like... I've got AC joint reconstruction in my left shoulder, which was mechanically incredibly simple because they just drilled two holes in my collarbone, put a synthetic ligament down and round, pulled it tight, two titanium screws in, away you go.
Easy. No problem.
And that's, you're drilling and fixing into bone, whereas if you're doing a tendon, you're fixing tendon to tendon. So that's, I don't know.
Is that what Anthony Watson had? I'm trying to think.
I think he did.
Yeah.
Because if one of his calves, I don't know if it's still...
tiny.
Yeah, I don't know if it's still as small. Calf. It was, I remember when he
that
first
game
came,
back against Gloucester.
Yeah, he's like noticeably smaller because he spent 6 months in a moon boot.
Yeah, little tiny veal calf.
Yeah. He's still absolutely rapid, though.
Absolutely rapid. It's like, it runs on a slight curve. So
great 200-metre runner.
That bargain for sale isn't looking quite such a bargain now, is it?
Steve Diamond was very clear. He'll get more than 9 games out of him. That was his 9th game.
Right. So he only needs one more game.
One more game.
Hold on a minute. He's got a 9-month recovery stretch. Comes back, plays in the A-League. Steve is right again.
Well,
10 games. 10 games.
Unfortunately, the season starts in a month. So, no. He'll miss all of... I mean, more importantly for Manu Tuilagi, Lions.
Yeah.
That is what a blow.
Well, I guess... I'm very negative on the injury, just going off the worst case scenario, because you saw how long Anthony Watson took to come back. Hopefully it's not completely snapped or...
Yeah.
You don't know what the timeframes are until the doctors look at it properly, and there's nowhere. 9 months is complete speculation based on other Achilles injuries, so we'll see.
Yeah. It could be, if it's not a complete rupture, it could be a few months.
Yeah.
And he could be ready not long after the Six Nations and then fit for the Lions.
Yeah. I do feel sorry for Northampton, though. They look like a team that need season to end yesterday. I mean, basically, actually, for them.
Northampton season. I mean, in that I quite enjoyed that game for a few reasons. One of which was seeing Faf de Klerk at his absolute best when basically he's just being hard work.
Yeah,
he was an absolute nightmare for Alex Mitchell. And he was in his head.
Yeah.
He was... like niggling him
and
here,
he
niggling
is.
Him there.
No word of a lie, right? He is one of the nicest men in Sale. Like, I think you guys have met him too.
Lovely bloke.
He's so polite, he's so nice, and he's so mild. Like when you meet him, and yet on the field he could be an absolute terror.
But he was in Alex Mitchell's head. He was also in Wayne Barnes's head because he was niggling Mitchell so much, and then every 50-50 decision went Faf's way.
Yeah,
and it was a brilliant bit of how to totally disrupt your opposition.
There was an interesting bit on comms when they raised Alex Mitchell with Diamond, and they said, "Yeah, this Northampton number 9 is giving you some problems." He goes, "Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on him." And I wonder if there's a little bit of pre-match research done as to who are you looking at, Steve? Who are you targeting? And they went right, Alex Mitchell. Then Faf went to work, but the way that Northampton are playing, there's no bite about them, there's no fights up front, the backs only play out the back, which is why they get smashed so much. They don't help out the forwards setting a target.
They score the occasion, the backs, if you get nice front football, clean ball, you score occasionally amazing tries.
Yeah,
like the RC Tuala try, brilliant work play, great execution, beautiful lines. It's the one time they got a backs move going in the whole game,
and that's the classic. You just said it there.
Massive if.
Then, but the if isn't happening, but they're still pursuing the then.
Because you've got Digwell, you've got Hutchinson, both incredible players. I mean,
Proctor is a great player as well.
But
former Keane.
It's like they've forgotten what they do well, and what they do well is move their feet. They create space. They get over the line in a far more not passive or sort of discreet way. Say then. The Cell Sharks pack do.
Actually, is that 8 defeats now out of 9?
It's bad.
8 defeats out of 9. They lost 2 before lockdown as well, so this isn't just post-lockdown. This is just before lockdown. But I think the way you can categorise their play over the last 10 rounds of Premiership matches, they got the one win against London Irish. I think it was. They don't win collisions.
That was shown that first 5 minutes was... just the big Sale pack, the big
Sale,
big boys running over smaller men.
I mean, the way that Sale are playing, I worry. My biggest worry about Sale, the way they played against Northampton, the way they've been playing since they came out of lockdown, actually, is they're playing like they're just a bigger schoolboy team than everyone else. They're playing like they're trying to win the Daily Mail Cup. And Northampton let them do that. Like, Exeter won't let you do that.
No chance.
So I think they'll... I think they'll probably make the final. If they get into the playoffs, they'll make the final because they can beat up almost anyone. Except Bath and Exeter
are the two. Because I think Bristol or Wasps, Sale can beat them up front. I don't think they can beat up Bath or Exeter.
I think on terms of talent, they're all pretty even, first 15. In terms of how they play the game, my suspicion is Exeter and Bath are a little bit more advanced in terms of their team pack game rather than Sale, which are, I mean, they literally do play like very, very large schoolboys. You know, they run upright, you know, they're trying to hand off six people. You know, they're trying to do it all. And I just wonder if it's going to be enough.
And going back to that top four, Sale will get their 5 points. It's elsewhere that might define their season because that they could end up going away to Exeter. Yeah. Or they could end up being at home to Wasps.
Home to Wasps would suit them.
Would suit them. Love, that would be
perfect. It is
perfect.
A tremendous season by anyone's standards. I think the top four, it's a tremendous achievement. What do you think about Van Rensburg on the wing?
So it's interesting because when you see him lined up against Nairavoro, you think, oh, that's quite a clever play. But Nairavoro only got brought in for a last-minute injury.
Yeah.
He was meant to be on the bench.
That's right.
So Rensburg was lined up against... Was it Collins originally?
Yeah. And you wouldn't fancy him against Collins, would you, really?
Not if Collins is given some room.
No.
But he did well.
I thought he looked quick. More importantly, he looked really quick.
He did look quite quick. And I would say the man he was up against probably... That probably says a lot about the two teams. Van Rensburg can... slotting on the wing, and it's such a well-oiled machine that he looked decent.
Well,
he looked decent out of position. Nairavoro is totally the embodiment of Northampton. Yeah, he's lacking so much confidence.
If I was Northampton, I would start him, and I would run him up the middle, just get his hands on the ball, get him comfortable, get him over the game line a few times, settle everyone down. That's what I would have done. The fact they didn't play him is mental. But, you know, he's out of form. He's the ultimate out-of-form player in Northampton, actually. You saw him against Exeter. It's like he's never played the game before in his life.
I've just remembered it was Proctor was supposed to be on the wing with Hutchinson in the centre, and that was the shift. Anyway, speaking of out-of-form Northampton players, this was probably the worst game I've ever seen Dan Bigger play.
It wasn't great, was it?
Dan Bigger had so many bad moments.
He's had some awful games for the Ospreys. I mean, like, utter toilet games.
I've never really watched the Ospreys.
I mean, on the rare occasion.
I love Dan Bigger. He's so good. He's such a competitor. However, I did notice that in about 3 minutes into the game, I think it was Dan Dupree ran over him massively.
That sounds likely.
Massively. And he was, like, cartwheeled backwards.
Yeah.
I was like, surely someone's going to look at that for a head knock. Bigger's got a history of head knocks, but no, he played the full game and he made some odd decisions and odd mistakes.
Like a concussed fly half.
Maybe like someone who should have been taken off 3 minutes into an 18-minute match instead of 63 minutes into an 18-minute match. Now, I might be saying...
Correlation doesn't equal causation, but you never know.
He had a terrible game.
Yeah. One last thing on Van Rensburg on the wing. I think this is a serious move, not a part-time move.
Really?
Yeah, and do I...
Not that, now Manu's injured, surely.
Well... The reason I think that is when Manny was injured, they bought on Sam Hill. They could have bought on Marlon Jordan on the bench.
Did they not switch things around?
Nope, he stayed on the wing. Sam Hill came in at 12.
Because wasn't AJ originally lined up? But yes, Sam Hill came on wearing 22.
AJ will be playing on Sunday, right?
I would hope so.
Fancy rugby draft. Need him playing.
Strongly hope so.
Because Bigger's my other fly half.
Ooh, that'll be bad. I think so, like Rob Dupree. That's... By the way, when has a looped pass been referred to as a bridge pass?
I don't know.
Apparently it's a bridge pass, that's not a bridge pass. So a bridge pass is, allegedly, I've never heard this before, is when you launch the ball over the onrushing defence's head. So you know, it sort of comes up nicely.
Like that try at the weekend. What was the try at the weekend? Or was it? Hold on. Or was it the other? Was it the other night? It was Wasps. The Dan Robson to
yes, that'd be that
okay.
One. He just wanged it from halfway, miss four to the winger,
like Cipriani does all the time.
Yeah, that's a bridge pass. Bridge pass
according to. Yeah, everybody
knew that. That will go down with resourcing the ruck,
Affecting the turnover.
Turning the ball. What's wrong with the turnover? We already call it turnover. Affecting the turnover. Do you reckon we can expand that to positively affecting a turnover?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Positive. Yeah, when you positively affect the turnover. Do we
rather need... negatively affecting the turnover.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, oh, that reminds me. I'll have to talk about that later. No, hang on. Let's just concentrate on one thing at a time. Young Player of the Year was selected for the Premiership this year, or they were debating it midweek. I don't know who won it, but I'm absolutely outraged it's not Luke James.
I mean, without knowing who it is, I can't have a proper debate.
The fact that it isn't Luke James should get you riled up enough. I don't think he was even considered. He wasn't even on the shortlist. Luke James will be starting for England at some point, and I suspect he'll be starting at fullback because he's ace.
Mm. Watch this space.
Watch this space.
Anything else to add on to this game?
Nah.
There's one thing that really annoyed me, which was... Tom Curry made a tackle, or was second man on a tackle.
Oh, I love that tackle.
Not the Nairavora one. That was a good tackle.
I did like Tom Curry giggling when he got up from that, when he botched Nairavora into touch.
That was a bloody good
Do you think he's got more aggressive since hanging around with South Africans?
Or since hanging out with Eddie Jones?
One of the two has made him incredibly
Or maybe both
aggressive.
Of them.
He's just got bigger. He's massive. He's huge.
I guess he's now playing like Tamarna Harrison would play in Tom Curry's body.
Tamarna Harrison would play in Billy Vunipola's body.
Yeah, something like that. Like, the guy is turning into an absolute beast.
He is an animal.
But no, it's a bit of frustration, which was someone else made the tackle. I think one of the Dupreez made the tackle, and Curry was first in over to Jackal. But he had one hand over the top of the player reaching for the ball, which was on the side that Wayne Barnes was on. And his other hand, he wrapped under the body. I think it was Adamdorf.
Right.
And so to Wayne Barnes on this side,
clever.
Barnes had a perfect picture in going for the ball. But he's got his arm and shoulder, like, tucked under Adamdorf, who's another 17, 18 stone man. Mm. So two attackers, maybe South Africa.
Yeah, of course he is.
Via France. Two attackers, or two players try to come to clear him out, and there is no way on earth they are moving him because it's dead weight beneath him.
And no way on earth he's supporting his own weight either.
He's
ripping a ball.
But yeah, he's never going to rip the ball with one hand, hand flapping around like this.
If the player's holding on to it, right, doesn't matter how lightly he's holding on to it, he's still trying to lift the ball. Am I wrong?
But it's the tucked in arm underneath. That's the issue.
That's clever, isn't it?
So it is incredibly clever. It's also frustrating because that is against the rules, and they're trying to really clean up the breakdown, and a lot of the breakdowns were pinged.
But what would you roll there?
I think a lot of the breakdowns in that game were pinged actually too early. I think they were Barnes was a little bit too whistle happy at times, and it's I don't mind that if it cleans up the game. It's just frustrating when you get like things that are obvious from us looking at it from a slight distance away.
I quite like, and I get frustrated by the different interpretations. Like, I was in the game at the weekend in Paris, I was sort of thinking, God, Nige is just letting this be a bit of a free-for-all at the breakdown. He loves it. He's letting the boys play. He's just being really loose. But then I agree with you that Wayne Barnes, I mean, both amazing referees.
Yeah, and Barnes made some great decisions. I thought the Adamdorf fend on Sam James was... I thought he called it absolutely spot on, even though it was interesting to hear Ben Kay and Ugo saying that he's very lucky to get away with that. Hmm. But I thought Barnes' interpretation was absolutely correct. Just on that one, the hook was...
The hook?
The hook of Curry under Adamdorf.
Yeah, sorry.
Was
I like that. I like any kind of innovation around the... around
I mean, if Tom Curry has done that deliberately, knowing... had the awareness going, ball's there, players on the floor, I'm jackling, referees to my left, left arm up, right arm down. That's amazing.
It is. If he's aware of Wayne Barnes' positioning, therefore he chooses his right arm to hook rather than his left arm.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Unbelievable.
These boys spend so much time working on their jackal technique. Have you ever seen the clip of the Curry boys working.
Yeah, with a tackle bag.
Yeah. And got elastic bands on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I bet Willis is the same. I bet Underhill is the same. I bet they're all doing it. I mean, I bet
it's like in a movie when they've got a beast and they've got four different people yeah. holding
Dungeon
them on a
Master.
Chain. Keeping it in the middle. They're like, it's like that with the Curry boys.
And they smother the ball in like some sort of meat paste. Really get the senses up.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, that's all I've got to say really about North.
Yeah, just running through some of the headlines which are inconsequential to the Premiership race, but London Irish arrested a 9-game losing streak and snuck a win away at Exeter, which is a good result. Whatever team Exeter are playing. And albeit it was a second and a half team for Exeter, London Irish should feel very relieved because, well, not relieved, they should feel very pleased because it stops that run, gives them a bit of confidence, something to show for their efforts, and it means that whatever happens this weekend, Leicester will be finishing the league in 11th position.
They really are garbage.
And Leicester fans can say, well, we wouldn't have played those teams if it was a real relegation this season. And that's a fair shout. However, it doesn't detract from the fact Leicester, this season, are now officially the worst team in the league.
Hang on a minute. I've got some even more profound thoughts on Leicester and their teams, right? If they weren't going to put out those teams, well, I don't know what the alternative is. What's the alternative? They're going to do the Northampton thing, go like 1A, 1B, mix some of their senior players in with their junior players.
I don't know what their alternative, because nothing has worked for them since the restart. So, and in this, I don't know if you watched any of this Bristol-Leicester game.
I watched about five minutes and thought, right, this is done.
Yeah, Leicester barely fired a shot.
They looked marginally better than they, and when I say marginally better, I'm not impressed, but I thought the young lads who were put out there are starting to realise how hard Premiership rugby is. And instead of being incompetent at the game for, say, 79 minutes, they can hold up a fight for, I don't know, 20 now. You know, and that's impressive. That is actually impressive.
So I will say the Leicester team worked incredibly hard in defence.
Yeah.
And because that's a quite a remarkably serious Bristol team considering the game they had at the weekend.
Yeah.
They put out a strong team, but so, Leicester never, offensively, they never got into the game.
Yeah, and let me just elaborate on what sounds like horrible, damning with faint praise there. We are not talking about young lads who have been put into a team with first teamers. You're talking about young lads with basically no leadership whatsoever except for the occasional player that might be dropped in. You know, God knows if he's playing to his full ability. You've got a championship team trying to learn a young championship team trying to learn the ropes in the Premiership every other week for Tigers. They're always going to fail. So the fact that they've even done that, it even kept it close for 20 minutes, is actually pretty good. Now, back to what I say about teams. Let's just divide this into this year and next year, because there are some huge ramifications. This year, if they went down the Northampton route and thinly spread their first team across both matchday squads, midweek and weekend, well, they still would have finished bottom, but at least they could say they gave their young lads an opportunity to perform with senior players. And I actually think the overall squad would be better for that experience. Fast forward to next year. If this second team's squad is what we think is their second team. I mean, I don't see any new player or that many new players coming through the
door. Well, they've got about five good new players.
But
yeah.
But how many did they lose to England? And then how many of these...
Just George Ford and Genge.
George Ford, Genge, Youngs?
No. Well, yeah, probably.
Probably. Yeah. Dan Cole, nope.
Maybe not Dan Cole.
Not Johnny May anymore.
Any internationals...
Not Manu Tuilagi anymore.
No, well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of an advantage, I guess.
But they're halfbacks, yes.
Yeah, but their halfbacks are gone. That's where all the money is. So, you know, they're going to be with Zach Henry and Ben White. I actually like both those players, but I don't think that's going to be enough to keep their head above water for 11 games.
Well, we can talk about that in the build-up to the new season.
Dark times for Leicester next year. Far worse than we think.
Maybe the situation with internationals and their lack of game time is good news for Newcastle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a great
shout. That is a good point.
That's a very good shout. Maybe that's the plan. Maybe the plan is, look, we are going to get absolutely battered next year with these guys. Let's make sure they can play together now, and maybe they'll be competitive for 30 minutes. Who knows? We might get a bonus point. We might get a bonus point in 11 weeks.
Yeah, in 11 weeks they might be competitive for 75 minutes.
Yeah.
It does demonstrate the competitiveness of the Premiership and the effectiveness of a salary cap. But there's no getting away from Leicester finishing in 11th, or 11th with an asterisk, as in Leicester being the worst club in the Premiership.
They so deserve to go down.
The 12th best club in the Premiership. Yeah. That's the first time that's ever happened. It's the first time that's ever happened, and it just so happens it happened in a year when... There's no relegation.
It's so frustrating as an outsider to watch, because they don't have the nerve as an organisation to clear house. They keep on adding and adding and adding and adding, and the same rot which, you know, caused this in the first place isn't getting removed. It's still in there, but they just add more people to it.
Well, and clear more players.
Yeah, it's like a barrel of rotting apples, and you add fresh apples in, hoping the rot will disappear.
You're diluting the rot.
Exactly right. Let's add Borthwick to this. Let's add Mike Ford to this. Let's add whoever...
Alan Waters.
Alan Waters, who apparently is going to be the guy who fixes everything. Never has so much faith been placed upon a conditioning coach. But it's not going to work.
Well, Leicester will be saying... Firstly, they'll be saying, we weren't actually the worst team in the league because we would have won more.
Lies.
But you can't say that, because shoulda, woulda, coulda. But Leicester will be saying, this, everything since lockdown hasn't mattered. We gave it a crack in Europe and came up short in the semi-final. But they got to the semi-final.
Yeah, they did. I mean, in the history books, they won a quarter.
Yeah, and but they'll be saying that it's all about day one of the new season, and maybe they can turn it round. We'll see. It's a big test of all of them.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the attitude of that club is exactly the reason it deserves to go down. And they can say whatever they want, but it's because of that attitude that they are the worst team, because they thought that nothing matters anymore. You know, we'll toss it off. We'll throw these young lads to the wolves. That's why they're the worst team. And if they don't sort that out, they're not going to sort out anything.
Well, they've done that with next season in mind, so that will be the judgment.
Crikey.
That will be the judgment. But there's no getting around the facts. They are the 12th best. And had Saracens not had their second points deduction added, they would be 1 point ahead of Leicester.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, God. What have they done to that club? Anyway.
Well, they're working on it.
Yeah, yeah.
They're working on it.
They're doing some work. But I've got some news.
Yeah, go on.
The RFU in all their wisdom. Have you seen this bizarre tweet that they've put out? It's from a Twitter account called RFU Support. Don't know what they do. But, I don't know how they can support you after they fired all of their community officers. Anyway. They put out a tweet.
RFU support, job centres that way.
Yeah, they just put you into certain directions. They put out a tweet saying, in fact, I'll read the actual tweet because I don't want to get the wording wrong. And I just found this utterly bizarre. Are you looking up there?
I'm trying to. RFU support. There's RFU IT support, but that is a different thing.
What, is there a company called RFU? Because they'd probably support. Be better at helping us with rugby. Right, RFU club support. Let me just make sure this is the official England rugby club support account for news updates on the support available to rugby clubs. I mean, that'll broadly be none. So, here's a tweet. Clubs to submit notification of all positive COVID-19 tests within a club, including retrospective cases. This is requested to allow us to monitor the number of confirmed COVID-19 tests occurring at a club and ensure clubs have the right support. What does that mean? What? You're an intelligent man, Phil. What kind of support would you give to a club who would have five tests 3 months ago, which were positive? What could you possibly do with that?
The antibody tests or retrospective tests is...
retrospective. I mean, if my whole team came down with COVID, what are they going to do? Show up with some more tests? Do they support you when you haven't had any COVID? Because then you can come with thermometers and whatnot and, you know, perspex cages to keep your players in. What is it that they are trying to support us with? Because I mean, if it's cash, that's great. Because if COVID cases equal cash, I will get 100 positive tests by tomorrow. If, however, it is just another tool to cancel training and nanny us and, oh, you got a positive COVID test, so we'll support you cancelling training and games for all of your players. I'm not interested. I can't imagine what it is. Again, it is more doing work for work's sake.
Well, you love filling out forms, don't you?
Love filling out forms.
You really love filling out forms. So this gets you an opportunity to hone those skills.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd just say, you know, I mean, I think the orders should go out to your rugby team that if you have COVID, don't even get tested. We don't need to know. Just brush it under the carpet.
No. No. Self-isolate.
That's a joke.
Follow the
that's
government guidelines.
It's a joke. Get tested and be at risk of a £10,000 fine. If you're positive and you leave your house, that is the obvious thing. That is the obvious thing.
Or more cash if you're a rugby club.
Yeah, yeah. No, if they want to offer us, on a serious note, if they want to offer us cash, we will send you as many positive tests as you want.
Rob Baxter faced the wrath of rugby Twitter by suggesting that rugby needs to move beyond the current testing regime in the Premiership. It got characterised by some idiots on Twitter as Rob Baxter says we shouldn't test for coronavirus and therefore he wants your nan to die. But what he actually said was, looking at the number of positive cases that are being detected, the fact that the squads are kept so isolated from anyone else in society and the fact they're so young and fit, all of those things together means that the cost of £8,000 a week...
It's huge, isn't it?
...to Premiership clubs...
And the
...right now, with the financial situation, probably isn't the best use of funds. I think that was... And Rob Baxter said, and that testing capacity...
This is the bigger...
...would be handed over to people who might be much more vulnerable.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what tests they use for the RFU. Not the RFU, for Premier Rugby, sorry. But they have to be better than the tests that they use out in the community. They're flying these tests by helicopter to Northern Ireland, from what I understand. And there's a lab there which will process them. I think, actually, that lab has been... All right, I might be wrong here. I think that lab has been subcontracted out by...
Yeah, it has.
Someone, I'm not sure...
It has. It's a private firm pitched for it. Other companies could pitch for it. But, yeah, basically, 100... Premiership clubs pay 100 grand a week between them.
Yeah.
So they've spent... since the restart of rugby, they've spent... £1.2 million. Well, yeah. Over £1 million.
God.
Yeah, it's an incredible sum of money. I mean, it's
And it's found, however, whatever number. But because they're so...
The numbers are incredible. Because I get the report every week or twice a week when they're doing it. There's an official Premiership report that comes out.
Yeah.
And the numbers are generally between 1 and 10 people out of about 1,000 people that they test a week.
But I think when you look at the wider point, I think Rob Baxter's point was that because they're so conscious of being able to fulfil their fixtures, particularly, I mean, Rob Baxter's got no reason to try and jeopardise Exeter being taken out of a competition right now because they're in everything.
Yeah.
Like Cast for their three players that were isolated from the squad.
The situation in Caster, we are not testing a single lad. What we're going to do is we're going to get one lad, and he's going to be isolated on his own. We will. I don't know how we'll feed him, but we'll
lock him in a cupboard.
Yeah. All 30 tests will be done on that one individual. So, and that's all we're doing.
For breakfast, lunch and dinner, he's got to wash it down with a bottle of Dettol.
Yeah. And we'll do his test. They go off. And as for you boys, if you get any symptoms, stay at home, but we're not getting kicked out of Europe. Maybe that's it.
But I can see the point Rob Baxter was making.
Hang on. Where is...
James Short.
Where's James Short?
James Short is locked in a cupboard, drinking Dettol.
He's the fall guy.
Someone find out where James Short is right now.
There you go, man who can do that job for sale now.
Ideal.
You don't even need to lock the door because you can't run away.
Yeah. I also, here's another lockdown thing, which is... It did annoy me, but now I'm kind of more on board with it. I had to coach touch rugby last night.
Oh, yeah.
Over Tok H.
You're normally pretty vocal about your disdain.
Well, you're not allowed to do contact now?
No. Well, yes. Yes, I think we are. I don't know. The answer is nobody knows. The reason we're doing touch is because we have an actual tournament. So
I thought you would have said I can't be involved in this setup for the time being because I'm so against touch rugby.
I'm so against it, right? And I am so I viscerally against it because I just think it teaches the wrong things and yada yada yada. And effectively, it is what it is. But the reason I decided to take it seriously is because we are playing lots of other local sides, and frankly, I don't want Tok H's name next to a load of losses, no matter what form of rugby it is, when we play Stockport or Ultram Kursal. By the way, we did lose those last week. and we beat Heaton Moor, I think, it doesn't really matter. The point is, club pride. So I got on the phone to a guy that I know who played for Great Britain or England Touch to talk about the rules of touch. And I've got to say, I was pleasantly surprised by learning about the... It doesn't mean I like it, but learning about the intricacies of touch is actually quite an interesting... It's an incredibly cynical game.
That's massively cynical.
Yeah.
Because you've got to seek contact on your terms.
Yeah. That's what I don't like about it. People run towards you. When you're defending, people run towards you and reach out the ball to touch you with the ball to be touched.
So you instigate the touch.
I hate that. I really hate that.
So, this is interesting. So there's a few things which he said to me, and I thought, bloody hell, that's actually quite clever. So one of the things is line speed. When I think of line speed, I want to hit Phil as hard as I can.
Me?
Yeah, you personally. So I get off the line as quick as I can, and I want to generate as much power, as much force, blah, 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 accelerate into the target. Well, with touch, you basically want to take one or two fast steps, but there's no reason for you to go past that target, because as soon as you touch them, there's a race that goes on, isn't there? Which is, the race is, I've got to put the ball down, my friend behind me has to pick the ball up, and I've got to get back.
Defenders have got to retreat 5 yards.
Yeah. So there's no, getting beyond the line is an absolute joke. You don't want to do that at all. So your line speed, bang, bang, and then slowly up. And here's another fascinating thing. Where do you think the defender retreats to if you make a touch?
The defender retreats to?
Yeah. So I just said to this guy, give me the absolute basics on touch defence. Where do you think the player retreats to?
The tackler.
The tackler, yeah.
The same 5 yards back.
5 yards back, but where?
Directly behind the tackle.
Tim, any advances behind?
Well, it's obviously not that. Because,
it's obviously not that, no.
Because otherwise you wouldn't have asked the question. So, no, I don't know.
So they call it corner flagging. So what you do is you rush up. We don't rush up. Ba-bang. Two little steps, touch. And then you corner flag. And the reason you corner flag is because...
Otherwise, there's a gap.
Yeah, you're transferring the space and the tired person sideways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So as you're corner flagging, your two mates behind you will close that gap, and they will be the new defensive front.
Jay, I'm gonna this is interesting. I'm just gonna say to you, the you of only a few weeks ago would be livid listening to the you now.
That is very true.
Lockdown does very strange things.
Literally,
very strange things. But like, they are looking for penalties. They're not looking to score. If they're in their own half, they're looking for penalties. Only looking for it. I must admit, some things are quite interesting. It is a coward's game. There's no two ways about it. Like, the idea you're just trying to milk the penalty, and you've got.
I was going to say milking penalties and going, no, come back here. I want to be touched.
It's something so despicable. It's like, it's so bad. Costa playing football, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so bad, it's good. It's the Ouje of rugby.
Are defenders trying not to touch?
There are times if you find yourself like isolated or behind your line that you'd be, as in, if everyone else in your defensive line is in front of you, the last thing you want to do is actually make the touch because they've all got to retreat even further.
Yeah, there's no way to slow the ball down as a defender, is there?
Well, that's a great question.
Because can you just grab? Can you touch and grab for a second?
No, you can't. And I was considering this. Like,
but you could dummy tackle so that they start to put the ball down.
Yeah.
As in, you go to reach out to make the tackle and then withdraw your hand at the last second.
Yeah, there's a lot of anticipation.
So they've already... Because the players, once that touch happens, they're instantly... They're already... The ball's on the floor.
Kabaddi. Yeah. We should play kabaddi. That's better. That's more... At least when the contact happens, it's full on.
I've got to say, if I just park all of my bias, there are some very interesting things that happen in touch. It doesn't replace rugby in any way. It's a sport in its own right, and it's a very good sport in its own right. Once you understand it, it is quite interesting. It does break my heart that, you know, I'm teaching my team, who are so good at lineouts and so good at the things that we do to, you know, deconstruct and play touch. It just doesn't work. It's like having a great football team and then, you know, taking them to play basketball.
Are they enjoying it? Because that's the main thing, I guess.
Actually.
Okay.
Well,
that's good.
And just one more thing on touch. They are continuously substituting people because you don't. The work rate is unbelievable. Actually.
It is unbelievable fitness.
Yeah, the fitness and touch is, I think, far beyond what you find in actual 15s.
And you don't need to carry around 120 kg.
Well, it's totally different fitness, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's completely different.
It's just running fitness.
There's no need for.
There's no hitting the deck, getting back up.
Now, I wonder if it'd be better if there was though.
There's no isometric like grappling type.
No,
it's all just running back and forward.
And there are some, you know, skill-wise, I mean, I don't think skills really come. Your wingers have got to be your slowest guys. And the reason you've got to have your slowest guys on the wing is because if you want to deploy all of your speed through the middle. Mm. It's the opposite. So your wingers have just got to be guys that catch the ball and put it. Sorry, Tim, you look at your phone and you're so bored.
No, I'm just...
And they never...
It's just making me think again, like, why can't we bloody play rugby? Other sports are playing.
Laws.
Other sports are playing right now. And, geez, it's just getting me down. The lack of crowds, the lack of rugby,
it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic. Yeah. No one's feeling it more than the guys that are, you know, still going down in training. And I wonder how long training is going to last now. Now the nights are drawing in. There's nothing to look forward to on Saturday.
When you've not got a certain finish.
Yeah.
If you had, we know that 1st of January or 1st of February, whenever it is, if you've got that target in mind, there's light at the end of the tunnel, you can focus on it.
I think the emphasis has got to be on finding ways to just make training fun. And vary it. So, coaches, just turn up with something completely out of the blue, a new game. There's one game I remember every now and again, when I was a teacher and used to coach the first team, every time I'd bust out this little game, I absolutely bloody loved it. And it only happened rarely, but it was one where...
Was it five-a-side football?
Yeah, exactly.
15-a-side rugby.
You could pass in any direction. There were different balls going at different times. There was two little places where you could catch the ball in to score. Anyway, there was all sorts of things going on. It was constantly moving, really aerobic. There to keep an eye out, and they bloody loved it. So just I think it's good. It's a big test of coaches.
Yeah, it is.
This period,
definitely.
Although, do you know what I really enjoy? I really enjoy reading through. There's a certain school of coaching where everything's positive, and just reading through it and pointing out these little holes in all the theories. Not least the theory that you can't always be positive all the time.
You can always be constructive.
Not necessarily. There's not always. You know. I mean, look, humans have a range of emotions.
Well, no, you can. You can always be constructive. You can say. You can say. Yeah, you can think that guy's handling is absolute bobbins. And you can pull them aside and go, right, we're going to focus on
left-handed passing.
So left-handed passing today.
Yeah. I had a guy once, and he still plays for us. Great player. And he kept on dropping the ball. So I went, right, everyone stop, blew the whistle. And you know that drill where you have two lines of three facing each other, and you pass, pop pass, pass, and then you spin round, and pass. Well, I made him pass the ball and receive the ball from every member of the team, just doing shuttles until he had 30 passes. Went, right, do you understand now to catch and pass? Yes. And then went back.
Singled him out and shamed him.
Yeah. And overnight...
We're not going to start again until...
Stop! Johnny's going to catch the ball. Sorry, Johnny. Johnny's going to catch the ball something like 30 times. Pop, 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 pop. Happy now? Good. Off we go.
How many mistakes were there?
In the popping drill, not many, actually.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's always... The more senior a player, the more you should be on him. Yeah, look, humans have a range of emotions, right? And to only use a handful of them seems ridiculous.
Positivity.
Yeah, positive. One guy the other day on Twitter said, "Coach." By the way, most of the coaching stuff on Twitter is excellent. I mean, they really are. If you follow someone like Russell Earnshaw, brilliant. There's a guy at Sale have called Jed Hall, really, really good. You know, there are really, really good things to be had there, but it's always, always positive. And I believe that, you know, in things like blanket punishment. What was I about to say then? Oh yeah, someone requested things we should see in rugby. And one of them was quiet sidelines. I thought, that is nuts. I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say non-abusive sidelines.
Yeah, not the parents not screaming at.
But actually, they're wrong. You don't want quiet sidelines. You want bustling, busy sidelines with activity on and people having a good time and being supportive. You don't want quiet sidelines. That's absolute nonsense.
Yeah, that is nonsense.
But anyway, you know, and it had a little emoji tick next to it. It's like, no, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong.
So I can see the... I don't think... From what you've described, I don't think you're trying to say this, but I can see the benefit in incredibly clear instructions and concise instructions from the sidelines. Mm. Like, when you're playing, if someone tries to give you 5 points about what your opposite man is doing, what their tactic is, what your positioning is, your next move, like, if you try and give too much information in that situation, that is an absolute disaster. You've got to have incredibly concise one point.
Or if you... If you're constantly telling people what to do and they're reacting to it, then they're never learning to make decisions on the field. Like, my perspective as a coach, the times I coached the team, is my work was done. Before match day, and even to the point where it was like, I wasn't the sort of coach, and I don't believe in going in there 5 minutes before and trying to G them up. It's like, no. My job's done, and hopefully I've given you all the context and all the information and all the ability to be able to make the right decisions on the field.
I'm mixed on that. I'm not going to change their strategy, but I am going to tell them that, you know, this team doesn't respect them and that they all hate us and, you know,
really rattle them up.
I'll give you a great shame game, right? So I think shame is a really important one. So you basically make a team defend for as long as you want, and then if they miss a tackle, if someone misses a tackle, you blow a whistle, the game stops. The attack can do whatever they want. They can get in a huddle and talk or do whatever they want. The defence, everyone has to get down and do 5 burpees. Except for the guy who missed the tackle, because you're not allowed to work whilst your mates are working. You've already missed the tackle, and the only way that you're going to get out of this, right, is to watch your mates work. So you stand up and you count, and then you count your mates doing burpees. And then once your mates are finished, we will start again. And it is amazing, right, how quickly people stop missing tackles.
I like that.
Yeah, it's dead easy. Or in line-up practice, we always have 3 or 4 guys spare. But you drop a ball a few times,
I get what you're doing. The problem is, what if you just have an amazing attacker and there's no difference?
Well,
because that suggests that every tackle is makeable and every time you miss it, it's incompetence.
Well, I haven't told you the entire story there. So you start the game with a bit of shame, the shame game. And you'd start with the first few tackles being missed of doing the burpees or whatever the punishment is, and that individual doing nothing, standing there, you know, experience the shame. But then you progress it to say, but if your mate then makes the next tackle, you know, you don't have to do it. So what you do is you develop it from just being focused on one person to being focused on, actually, it's not just about you, it's about your mate wanting to help you too.
Do you then double the fines if there's two people in an opportunity?
Should be really.
If there's two consecutive missed tackles.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you miss it, but your mate gets it for you, then you're kind of off the hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just those times where, like, someone's busting a gut to desperately try, and they make an effort to try and get there, and they just clip his heel, but don't manage to bring him down.
Oh, and I'm
sort of going, stop.
I think you can levy any sort of physical. I mean, if any sort of fine or physical punishment or shame or whatever it is, if there is a mistake made and you've made a very clear effort to coach this thing and it requires no skill. So if we play a game and, for instance, you get tackled and you have to put your chest on the floor, bounce back up, and you don't put your chest on the floor, that's required no skill. You've just been lazy. So, you know, everyone can go running. The important thing is to punish the person's mates, not punish him.
I hate that shortcut taking.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lad in Sedgley who would repeatedly not hit the line. You know when you're doing, like, backwards and forward drills, yeah, and not hit the line, and it would drive me mad because it's... That's a penalty you're giving away. Yeah. That's a penalty you're giving away. That's a penalty you're giving away. Stop doing it. You're letting your teammates down.
The reason I coach like this is because I know that a player like me needs to be told and told off and disciplined continuously to do anything. Otherwise, give me some rope. I'll...
Well, you'll be missing all those lines, yeah, giving those penalties away.
Not Andy Gardner. That was your mate. Jamie Peacock. Is he Leeds? Who's the big holder back in Leeds?
Jamie Peacock,
right?
Yeah, the prop. England prop.
That was his thing. He's like, if we run to cones and you miss the cone by half a foot every time, and we do 100 shuttles, and you extrapolate those shuttles over every training session, over every week, over every month, over every year, over every season, how many miles of work have you missed?
Yeah.
How many miles of effort have you not put in?
Have you let your mates down?
Yeah.
Because that's what it is when it comes down to that. But
that's when it's most powerful. If a senior player or some of the players are setting the standard, number one, and enforcing the standard, like, that's not good enough.
That's an Owen Farrell thing. Owen Farrell's renowned as a nightmare if you're late for training. Or if you're on time for training, you're late.
Yeah, yeah. Lombardi time.
Yeah. It's an absolute nightmare, and it doesn't really matter who it is, Vunipola, whoever it is, they get it.
I can imagine Farrell really sets the standards.
Yeah.
Really demands absolute perfection in everyone.
Yeah.
And gets incredibly frustrated if anyone is not perfect.
You don't
at
have
all
to be,
times.
Yeah. It might not work well with kids, it works great with adults. And
yeah, I can
much.
Imagine. I can imagine adults, and the more competent, the more effective it is.
Yes. Especially if you're full-time professional getting paid big bucks to play rugby, like, there should be high standards set upon you.
Yeah, one of the Wasps players about 3 years ago was explaining what Wasps training was like, and he said it was brutal. If you dropped the ball, it's like, mate, do you fancy catching the next ball? Like, and that, it was sarcastic. It was you were scared to make any kind of error. But it sounded like fun. It sounded like great fun. St. Helens apparently exactly the same. Like, they had a sports psychologist who came away from St. Helens going, I don't know how you guys function. Like, you're so horrible to each other on a constant basis. But they're one of the best rugby teams on the planet at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Fear, shame, they're interesting things. They have a place, but I think...
With your third team, not with kids.
Not with your third team, exactly. And I think that's probably where the... and going back to the quiet sidelines and stuff, and... I think that's all where I think those are the type of people that could stray away from rugby. Like, quality players are going to do it, whatever. They might just find a different club. But the players that these guys are thinking about are the ones that we might lose. Yeah, and bearing in mind this current situation, we need to keep every single rugby player we can.
It's this weird culture they have, removing scores and competitiveness and support.
I can tell you, the kids keep score.
Yeah, I bet they do.
They know who won. They know who won the game. But like, taking Louis to mini rugby, they know who won the game.
Equal playing time is something which baffles me. Why do they all deserve equal playing time? What if they don't want to play equal playing time? What if one kid really doesn't want to play and another kid really wants to play? He really, really.
They probably have that leeway, but it disincentivizes the coaches who would prioritise winning over individual development at mini rugby level, say, for example, and so would just play the best players and give 2 minutes to the guy who's not very good.
But can't you just use your nouse?
Some coaches can't, no.
Yeah. Well, no. Then there's parents who use your nouse to remove that coach. I mean, I don't think these are not insurmountable problems. I don't like hard and fast guidelines to exactly how you should coach people and the standards which you should set to be.
If you think about them as principles, not rules, then I think they feel a bit better, which is the principle of that is everyone deserves an equal opportunity.
Well, my favourite thing when I was doing Rugby Ready, which is the RFU's entry-level coach, when they used to have community coaches, was they give you two basically contradicting scenarios. One is, well, the kids all have boots, but one brings trainers. What do you do? Well, I would say that kid doesn't play and he learns his lesson and brings boots next time, or he slides around on trainers. The actual answer to that is everyone should then go and change into trainers.
Bollocks.
Hang on.
What I thought you were going to say, the only element I would say to that is you have a little word like, check that it isn't this kid's from a really poor family and can't afford boots. And are there any spare ones in the clubhouse?
Yeah, everyone's got a box
of boots.
But
all of that, for goodness sake. Yeah. But saying everyone wears trainers, bollocks.
So then the next question is, like, what if a kid has glasses? And I can't remember what the answer is, but if I was to use the answer from your last question, do I not just give all the kids glasses? Like, is that not the only logical answer here? I keep a store of glasses.
No, you take the kids...
Well, do I say the kids got glasses off?
Yeah, you take glasses off him, but you put glasses onto everyone else so that everyone has equally bad eyesight.
He has clear frames, so he doesn't feel left out, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He wears clear frames.
Like, don't waste my time with this nonsense.
What was the answer to that, the second one?
I can't remember. I just remember them going back to back. It's like, I know what I'm going
to write. He wears the glasses, but no one is allowed to touch him.
Yeah, something like, who knows? Who knows what nonsense they came up with? But, I mean, it's not... You know, as an adult looking after kids, you don't need to pass a test. It's ludicrous.
Yeah, they're rules made for the exception, not for the rule, aren't they? They're principles brought in to protect from the one idiot.
No, they are rules to keep players in the game who otherwise would leave and become rugby bloggers. That's what it is. They weren't nice to me in the past. I don't like the physical contact, all the dedication, all the physicality. Well, therefore, I went away.
Think about it like that. Imagine how many fewer rugby blogs and various other things we'd have if they brought these rules in sooner.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Maybe these be stricter. No, because that'd be more bloggers.
We
need to be more accepting because the last thing we need is more bloggers.
Particularly at the minute, lazy bloggers that sound like they hate rugby. But anyway.
Enough.
Yeah, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Just enjoy the last weekend of the regular Premiership season to the seven clubs that have nothing on the line.
Yeah.
And the five that really do. As we build up to a crescendo of a season, we'll be back on Sunday, of course. Hit subscribe in your feed. He's at @jbeardmore on Twitter. And I'll keep an eye out for your replies to the RFU and such at the minute, by the sound of it. And your general COVID tweets. Yeah. I haven't tweeted for a couple of weeks now.
Good. So.
Well done.
And I'm at @cocker, but I'm not really doing anything there. Phil's lurking. Let's play.
Let's play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.